Hey, Tom Tilley, welcome to the Hack Podcast. Think back to your last breakup. Was there an obvious trigger that ended it? What if no one's cheated, no one's moving overseas, but it has to end?
Yeah, it didn't happen in the best way. It's hard to hurt somebody.
Breaking up when there's no obvious breaking point. Plus, the woman who defeated Tony Abbott.
Tonight, Warringah has definitely voted for the future.
Yeah! Zali Steggall coming up on the Hack Podcast. First up, do you love knowing how much other people get paid?
Hack.
There's incentive for Australians to go out there and have a go and get a fair go when they have that go.
Triple J.
The economy was a huge issue at the election. It always is. Generally, people are worried about losing out. But research shows we often have no idea how good or bad we have it compared to everyone else. So to set you straight, there's a new ABC income quiz that tells you how your pay compares to everyone else's in Australia. So here's Shalila Madora running a few people through the income quiz.
We're just looking up this website right now.
I reckon I'd be a bit higher than average. I reckon I'm going to be in the top 50%, 75%, kind of hovering around that. Hey, I'm Claudia. I work in Parliament House and I'm 22.
Claudia and I are doing the ABC's income quiz, which compares your wealth to other Australians. Claudia is playing it safe.
I reckon I'm going to pop in 72. I think that feels right to me. I went lower than I thought. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, right.
That is actually a shock.
Turns out Claudia is much higher up the pecking order than she thought. Claudia didn't come from privilege, so her result was a bit of a shock.
Like, I'm the highest income earner in my family because I reckon my folks are around, like, the average mark. So I've gone a bit higher, but I'm still not high enough. Wow.
Sian gets it.
I was really surprised. Like, I sort of anticipated that I'd be, like, average. So I was really surprised when I found out that I was actually doing better than I thought I was.
Sian's an occupational therapist and she struggled to get loans to help buy a place of her own.
I was either getting sort of knocked back or being offered, like, the bottom of the barrel, you know, nothing that was sort of substantial enough to really feel that I could purchase a house.
So she said it was eye-opening to realise how much worse off other people are.
I suppose growing up where I did, you know, most people sort of did own their own houses and I sort of assumed that that was a right.
Christopher Hoy from the Tax and Transfer Policy Institute at the Australian National University says Claudia and Sian are pretty typical of how most Australians think.
Around 92% of Australians think that they're in the middle 60% of the income distribution.
In other words, we think we're middle class, even if we're doing much better or much worse than other Australians. A big part of that is where we live. We compare ourselves to our neighbours.
We use these mental shortcuts to infer, oh yeah, our community is probably pretty typical.
Dr. Jill Shepherd from the ANU says that can lead to resentment.
We talk about this in terms of relative deprivation. I'm not doing too badly, but everyone around me is doing great and they've just bought new houses and they've got two cars.
Young people feel especially hard done by.
A lot of us grew up thinking that it was going to be easy to buy a house, that it was going to be easy to get a job, you know, with ongoing conditions, and that hasn't happened at all.
Chris has done research to show that your ideas about wealth and distribution play a big role in how you end up voting.
People who vote for the coalition tend to underestimate the level of inequality more than people who vote for, say, Labor or the Greens. In addition, people who vote for coalition tend to be more likely to think that your income is due to effort.
Or to put it another way,
fairness in this country means that if you have a go, you get a go.
But Chris says that's not actually how it works.
We live in a society that likes to think that everyone has a fair go. In reality, if you're doing well, it's largely to do with you're lucky.
You're probably getting really defensive listening to this. Everyone wants to believe that they got to where they are with hard work and good decisions. So I'll let Chris explain further.
The vast majority of things that cause our living standard are outside our control, such as the family we're born in, or the community that we grew up in, or even things like our health. Yeah, all the evidence shows that Australians really tend to underestimate the degree of inequality.
Hack Triple J.
Christopher Hoy from the ANU ending that report from Shalila Madora on the text line. The whole secrecy around income is why companies get away with paying women less for the same job. Transparency with the gender pay gap would make it way harder to get away with that. Another listener says, Hey, Tom, did that quiz? I just did that quiz and I'm much higher, top 6%. Big shock, Aaron in North Sydney. Another listener says, the application requires us to enter gross full-time equivalent when most are working part-time. Yep, for a lot of listeners, they are working part-time. Makes that calculation, that comparison quite difficult. Really interesting point there from Christopher Hoy from the ANU. He just said that if you're earning an above average income, it's largely because of luck, the family you were born into, your health, your genes. I'd love to get your reaction to that. 0439 75 7555. Professor Roger Wilkins is a social researcher from the Uni of Melbourne. Professor Wilkins, what do you make of that argument? Do you agree with that point from Christopher Hoy?
Well, there's no doubt that luck plays a role in our outcomes, but to say that it's mostly down to luck, that's probably, I think, over-egging it a little bit.
Yeah. So can you actually work out, I guess, what does really affect your chances of doing well financially?
It's actually a really hard question to answer. I mean, on one level, you know, we know that people from wealthier families are more likely to be wealthy themselves when they grow up. And, you know, partly that's, that's going to be because they've inherited advantage, or maybe they've got, you know, the good genes. You know, we don't necessarily entirely know why, but we also know that there's still quite a bit of mobility in our community, particularly say compared with the US, where we have sort of a mobility rate that's in the order of twice there. So you,
right.
If you come from a poor household here, you're considerably more likely to become rich in your adulthood than you are in the US.
Which sounds like a very academic way of saying, if you have a go, you get a go, which is Scott Morrison's line that he keeps trotting out. Does seem to be working. He won the election. Do you think if people were made more aware of how good they've got it, they would vote differently? They would vote for policies that potentially helped other people less fortunate than they are?
I'm not sure about this. So yeah, certainly I don't dispute the result that people who tend to vote for the right side of politics tend to think there's less inequality than there is. But we kind of selectively inform ourselves. You know, we sort of choose what news we want to read, and so it's kind of we can be a little bit self-serving in what we choose to believe. I'm not entirely sure it's as simple as people being better informed. It's a bit harder than that to solve.
On the text line, my wife and I work over 100 hours per week and are having a go, but are near poverty due to climate change on the land in Western New South Wales and on our sheep station. And we will talk about climate change with Zali Steggall, who just won Tony Abbott's seat over the weekend. Another listener says, I came from nothing and earned 160K. I worked effing hard to get to my position. Another listener says, my partner has come from a very working class family and is one of the hardest workers and most successful people I know. Everything he has puts down to opportunity. Is our society changing, Roger Wilkins? Is that class mobility, or that ability to, you know, go from being in a lower socioeconomic family to earning good money, is that getting harder or easier?
Look, the best evidence we have is that at least so far it's not really getting harder. It looks like our level of social mobility hasn't really diminished. I think probably the bigger issue is more an intergenerational one. So we are seeing that younger people, perhaps as a whole, irrespective of how well off their parents were, are finding it harder to do as well as their parents did. As was mentioned earlier in this story, that people are finding it hard to get into the housing market. They're finding it. Graduates are finding it harder than ever to get good full-time jobs. I think it's more of an intergenerational story than a sort of an inequality or mobility story.
Yeah, well, that's no news to a lot of people listening to this station, Roger, who are really struggling to live the same lives or, you know, even anywhere near as well financially as their parents. A massive intergenerational problem emerging there. Great to speak to you, Roger.
Thank you.
That's Roger Wilkins from the Melbourne Institute of Applied Economic and Social Research at the Uni of Melbourne. Tamika says, I'm Indigenous and I find that middle-earning white people have no idea of the systematic privilege they have in society. Another listener says, luck. When I decided to stop spending aimlessly and save for a deposit, 18 months later, through hard work and discipline, the deposit came. Nothing to do with luck. And people texting in about Zali Steggall already. She's just another get-up sugar hit based off personality and not policies.
Steggall takes Australia's first ever alpine skiing medal.
Former Prime Minister Tony Abbott has conceded defeat in Warringah to independent Zali Steggall.
On Triple J.
Yeah, she's had some big victories in life. And for Labor and Greens voters who were tearing their hair out on Saturday night, there was one moment of joy, or more specifically, schadenfreude, which means pleasure derived from someone else's displeasure. And that someone else in this case was Tony Abbott.
I can't say that it doesn't hurt to lose, but I decided that if I had to lose, so be it. I'd rather be a loser than a quitter.
So there you go. After 25 years in Parliament, 2 years as Prime Minister, Tony Abbott was defeated by independent Zali Steggall. The former alpine skier was the first Australian to win an Olympic medal in a Winter Games. She then became a barrister, and now she's the member for Warringah in the Federal Parliament. And as you might have heard, the focus of her campaign was action on climate change.
This is a win for moderates with a heart. Yeah. Warringah, we have a new beginning for our environment. I will be a climate leader for you, and I will keep the new government to account and make sure we take action on climate change. Yeah.
Now, Zali Steggall joins us now from her electorate. Zali, thank you so much and congrats on the win.
Thank you.
Now, climate change is a massive issue for everyone, but I'm wondering why it's such a big issue for you personally. Is it because you're worried your grandkids might never get to ski Zali's run at Perisher?
Well, my kids already don't actually love it because it gets too icy when they have to make too much man-made.
Because of the climate, yeah.
Well, yeah, there's not enough natural snow falling, but no. Speaking seriously, it's something we are all concerned about. Over summer, you see so many extreme weather events. It's on the news every night. I have teenagers, and they are seriously worried about what kind of world and what our legacy is going to be, what kind of, you know, messed up environment we're leaving them. So we have the facts. We do know what we have to do. It really is time to act.
Could you have won the seat without the millions of dollars spent by GetUp?
I have nothing to do with GetUp. I mean, that's a story that just keeps being pressed. GetUp came to Warringah mainly because Tony Abbott is such a climate change denier and it is such a major issue for them. I think in many ways it became a bit of a hindrance because there was so much focus on that and the negativity, and I think they really mismanaged some aspects of their campaign.
But there was a lot of negativity about Tony Abbott. A lot of it was about just criticising him.
Well, but look, he has such a legacy when it comes to his position on climate change. I mean, we've had about four different positions. He has been actively part of bringing down a number of prime ministers over climate change. I mean, you only have to look at Julia Gillard with the carbon tax, and the successive leadership sort of tussles with Malcolm Turnbull have generally all been over climate change policy. So there's no doubt that he's a very polarising figure when it comes to that issue. And I think that's why they were involved. But at the same time, look, they really weren't part of my campaign. There's certainly things that I wish they hadn't done. But I ran the campaign I needed to run, very positive, with a lot of support from grassroots and the local community.
We were just talking about how much Australians earn compared to each other. And Warringah, your electorate is the highest, has the highest median income in Australia. And the election showed us that when it comes to climate policy, there's a big divide between rich urban electorates like yours and regional Australians. And that was evident in this call we got yesterday during the show from a young Queensland voter who was disgusted by the Bob Brown anti-Adani convoy to Queensland.
It would have been people from the city going to a regional area and telling them how bad they are for support their family and also support the whole community. Like, there are whole towns dedicated to mining, and then there were people going up there saying, we want to cut down the mines, we want to cut all the work here, and you guys will have to move the city, or like, you guys will have to change your whole lifestyle.
It was a really interesting call, Zali. Do you have ideas on how to bridge the divide between working class Australians in areas that want the well-paying coal jobs and people in electorates like yours who, by and large, won't be the ones losing their jobs over climate change policy?
Well, there's two aspects that are just so wrong with, I think, the perspective and how it's been portrayed, and I think that caller's view, because the reality is regional Australia will probably be the hardest hit by climate change impacts when it comes to health impacts, coming from a overall warming situation. And if we get to a +2 degree world, the reality will be that health impacts will be severe and regional Australia will have drought and to a such greater extent, it will be really hard on those populations.
But we've tried telling them that, you know, the left of politics has run that message ad nauseum, but it didn't work on the weekend.
Sure. What hasn't been promoted enough is actually how many jobs come from large-scale renewables. So a lot of renewable projects are in regional areas.
But that message was tried again. The Greens ran that. It didn't work.
Well, I don't think it's being run properly. Look, at the end of the day, I don't think the Greens have run that message properly because when we talk to the council and people that have been involved in those projects, and those communities are absolutely revived by those large-scale projects, from the local bakery getting more business to long-term jobs. There is so much misinformation as to how many jobs are associated with coal because with the advent of automation, the vast majority of jobs are not done by people. They are done by machines. We have more jobs in tourism. So there is that, but this is a real issue that wages aren't keeping up, cost of living is going up, and there is high unemployment in our regional areas and in Queensland. I totally accept that and sympathise with that. And that's why we need a proper plan and not this polarisation of the debate. These two problems aren't going away. People in regional areas and in Queensland need jobs and livelihoods. I absolutely accept that. But we also need an environment we can live in.
Scott Morrison's already disappointed many voters today by coming out and saying that he won't be able to get the first part of his tax cuts through Parliament this financial year. Do you think he's misled voters on that issue?
Well, I guess it's all in the timing. I think it's the issues is also the makeup of the Senate and what he can get through or not, and the positions. I mean, there's always a lot of other things going on. I really think it's important we get those tax cuts through. I support them. From my point of view, I think they're really essential to assist people with the cost of living and making things a bit easier.
All right, Zali, it'll be interesting to see what impact you can have on this Parliament that surprised a lot of people. Thanks so much for joining us on Triple J.
My pleasure.
On the text line, 100% with Zali, especially from the ski racing industry, you can see how much climate change is affecting the earth. Ski racing is now a dying sport because of it. Lily Tomkinson, current national alpine team. Very sad message there for people that like skiing. In Warringah, I voted for Zali, says one listener. I'm usually a liberal, but Zali was a candidate that had the policies that resonated with me the most. And Katie from Canada says, Zali and I had the same ski racing coach.
Yeah, it didn't happen in the best way, but I don't think these things ever can. It's hard to hurt somebody.
On Triple J.
All right, let's talk breakups. In particular, how do you know when to call it when there's no obvious breaking point? No one's cheated on anyone. You're not moving overseas, but it's not feeling right. Well, the host of The Hookup, Nat Tenchich, has been opening up again on her show, and it's raised some really interesting questions about how to handle a breakup without an obvious breaking point. And just in case my girlfriend, or more specifically, her mother is listening right now, this segment was not my idea. Here is Nat Tenchich telling her story to Avni Dyers.
The moment I knew that it was over was when I realised that I was more in love with the memories that I shared with this person.
I knew it was the beginning of the end for us, for real, when he wouldn't support me in studying for a degree.
We broke up when I realised I couldn't meet the need and Les wasn't going to cut it.
Sometimes breaking up is a really simple decision to make. The reasoning can be crystal clear. Someone cheats, or maybe you fall in love with someone else, or maybe your lives are going down different paths. But other times, it may feel like the end, but there isn't an obvious reason why.
I first started dating this person when I was 20 and she was 18 and we were in a band together. Hey, I'm Nat Tenchich and I host The Hookup on Triple J.
Nat got into a long-term relationship in 2012 and it lasted 6 years. She tells me it was a formative part of her life. They went through heaps together and it was her first big relationship.
We got drunk at my friend's place one night and we were on the couch quoting Scott Pilgrim to each other and we ended up hooking up and the rest is kind of history.
You make me happier than I ever thought I could be. And if you let me, I will spend the rest of my life trying to make you feel the same way.
Yeah, movies and TV shows tell us love lasts forever, and sure, sometimes it can, but the truth is, most people will experience a relationship breakdown at some point in their lives. In 2017, 49,000 marriages ended in divorce in Australia. That's compared to nearly 113,000 marriages that year.
Those are the most recent stats available. Experts say that shows tens of thousands of couples who weren't married would have also gone their own way, which shows how common breakups are. So what are the warning signs a relationship is on the way out?
There were points where maybe she'd be a bit mean to me, or she'd kind of bring me down. She'd say things that I didn't like, and maybe I was doing the same to her. Like, there were points of real frustration where I think our goals were starting to diverge and our values were starting to diverge.
And a big test came when Nat's ex said she wanted to work in Japan, maybe indefinitely.
In my head, I was like, you know, I hope that she gets this out of her system so she can come back and, like, settle with me, because that's what I want. But it's clearly not what she wanted. What I've learned is it's kind of toxic to expect your dreams and your, like, your long-term goals will, you know, that someone can get that out of their system.
Okay, so you realise things aren't right, but how do you know if it's the right time to end it altogether instead of working through the problems?
I mean, all couples have ups and downs, good days, bad days. Every couple has conflict. We know the strongest couples that they do experience conflict, they do have disagreements, and they'll have, you know, tough times. But they have intentions to make up and get things back on track relatively quickly.
This is relationship psychologist Clinton Power.
If those kinds of feelings and experiences are going on for long periods of time and you're not starting that repair process, or there's just ongoing distress, that can be a serious sign that the relationship is not healthy for you.
So I broke up with her, or at least I brought it up. I had just kind of been feeling frustrated with the way she'd been speaking to me, and it just didn't feel like the right fit anymore. But I brought it up at not a great time, and she was really mad at me.
Was it hard for you to find that moment to actually bring it up and, you know, broach that conversation?
Absolutely. It's hard to hurt somebody. That's essentially what you're doing.
So what are the best ways to break it gently to someone who has been a big part of your life?
It's a big loss. You're saying goodbye to a lot. And people handle it in different ways. That you can do it with integrity, face to face, eye to eye, and also, you know, kind of celebrate the positive aspects of the relationship. That even though the relationship is ending, it doesn't mean it was a failure.
At the end of the day, it's your life and you need to be happy living it. And if you're spending your time with someone who drains that from you, then what are you doing, you know?
Hack on Triple J.
There you go. The often sharing, always caring Nat Tenchich, host of the Hookup Triple J Sex and Relationship Program. And you can catch that episode of the show on their podcast and all the other episodes where they get into loads of very interesting topics on the text line. I had to Google how to break up with my ex, and we actually have you on the phone, Vivian. What was your experience? Go ahead, Vivian.
Hi. So my ex-boyfriend, he was a little unstable, suffered a little bit from depression and a few different things like that. And so I had to Google what was the best way to break up with him. For me, the relationship had ended 4 months prior, but I felt so responsible for his well-being that I stayed.
Right, because of his mental health struggle. That's such a tricky one.
Yeah, so I felt a little bit stuck and a little bit trapped, and yeah, Google just basically said, you know, be honest, tell him that you love him but you're not in love with him and that it's just better off this way.
How did it go down?
He was pretty upset. He stormed out. He took it badly, but for me, I was very relieved, I was able to let go, and I felt better for it.
Yeah, interesting. All right, thanks for the call, Vivian. Gemma Cribb is a relationship expert. Gemma, there's two parts to this, really. There's the first bit, which is deciding that you really want to get out, which is really tricky, and then secondly is how you go about it, particularly in this situation where there's not an obvious endpoint. To that first question, and Nat touched on this a little bit, how do you know that it's not just a hard time that you need to work through and it's actually a point where you should leave?
Yeah, there's all sorts of things that can make you think, oh, it's time to leave. one of the things I find most common is, as in that story, where you realise that you actually have fundamentally different dreams. And sometimes couples can start out with the same dreams, and someone's dreams and passions can change, or else some other couples have never even talked about it at the beginning, so they find out at some point down the track that they actually have very different ideas for the future. And that can be a big deal breaker for a lot of people.
Okay.
In other circumstances, ongoing conflict where one party is not willing to get help for that is another obvious reason to start considering whether it's better out of the relationship rather than in.
All right, interesting. I'd love to hear from you. Have you had a relationship that you knew was over but there wasn't an obvious breakup point? How did you handle it? Give me a call. 1-300-055-36, 1-300-055-36. That point about ongoing conflict and tension, people often say to you, you need to work at relationships, which can make it really unclear of, like, what's work and what's, like, a terminal problem.
You bet. It is a really tricky grey area, and I would say there's a few certainties, which is you both need to work at it. So if you feel like either you or your partner are just not giving it the work that it needs, that's a good sign. And sometimes even when you're both working at it, but we're really just not reaching any good point, we're not resolving these issues, we're still having conflict and fights over things that destroy the happiness in the relationship, then it's actually a loving thing to do, to say goodbye.
Yeah, interesting point. It often doesn't feel that way. Do you think some people who are in this situation where they know it's probably over but they don't have an obvious end point, they often just let it deteriorate till there is some horrible, distinct breaking point?
Absolutely. I think very few people have the courage to hurt someone they care about feelings directly. And so what will happen is they'll avoid the issue. They won't have the conversation about how they feel. And they'll disengage from the relationship. They might spend more and more time at work or more and more time out with friends, or they might start a relationship outside their relationship, which their partner later discovers. And that's sort of the soft option around ending it. It's sort of letting it die in a more passive way sometimes.
Alex, what happened in your situation?
Hey there. I was in a situation similar to the first caller. My partner at the time, he had a lot of mental health issues, and I felt heavily responsible for his well-being. So we had the chat about us separating because at the end of the day, you know, we were moving in different directions, but he actually told a lot of our mutual friends that I had cheated on him in order for him to reconcile that. So I feel like a lot of people do struggle with the fact that sometimes it's just not going to work anymore. So, yeah, that was pretty rough.
Yeah, I guess that sounded like he wasn't able to, I guess, get over his pride being hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I can understand it, but it ruined a lot of friendships that a lot of friendships I thought I had. So, yeah, that was pretty rough, but I could definitely understand the other person's perspective in that situation, for sure.
All right. Thanks for sharing, Alex. Gemma Cribb, we're about to hit the news. Any last thoughts on this topic?
Oh, just that caller's experience is quite common. Some people need to hate on their ex-partner in order to feel better, because that sort of anger feeling is more empowering than feeling hurt and abandoned. So it's a really common experience.
Yeah, all right. Great to speak to you, Gemma Cribb. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hack
on Triple J.
All right, that's nearly it for the podcast today. Mike will get the last say. Please tell everyone to actually try and sort out any issues before they break up first. I broke up with my ex 3 years ago because I was in a bad place, but now I regret it. Ooh, tale of heartbreak to end the show. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. I'll catch you on the next one.